Welcome to Clear Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples. On today's podcast, how can God be holy and loving in light of evil? Ken, that question was posed to you recently, and it's not a small one.
Yeah.
One of those big ones. So tell us what you're going to talk about today.
Well, I have kind of had an entire life kind of studying world history and American history. And I remember when I began taking my Christianity very seriously, studying about the Holocaust. And that is a game changer. There are many people who would say that the Holocaust kind of changed the way people thought about God or thought about God's justice. How could 6 million Jews be exterminated? And if you look at the numbers and you add Poles and Russians and Jehovah's Witnesses and homosexuals, the number could be more than 20 million people. So I had a recent interaction with a friend of mine on social media, and I'd like to talk a little bit about how the Holocaust might influence our views about God's holiness and his loving or his goodness.
All right. Thanks, Ken. And I'm sure you're going to talk about what this is called. I think the term is theodicy, or at least related to what we're talking about. Maybe you can define that for us.
Yes. Well, a theodicy, the term comes from theos, God, and then the second part of that word relates to the justice of God. So how can you justify God's goodness in light of the challenges of evil? You might think about that in kind of two ways, Joe. Some people would say there are defenses of God, how God could somehow be compatible with evil. And then there are particular theodicies. Then you'd get into specifics. For example, I think that there's a lot to say about God brings good things out of evil, pain, and suffering. So that would be a specific theodicy. Or as we've talked about with some of the great Christian thinkers, Irenaeus would talk about there is the soul development that God uses pain, suffering, and evil to help us to grow as Christian people. This is, I think, a very interesting topic, Joe, because I don't think that I have come across any real defeaters for God. By defeater, I mean it in a philosophical worldview sense that, is there anything that would logically rule out God's existence? I don't think the hiddenness of God does that. I think that Christians have a good and adequate response to that. I think there have been other challenges that people have brought. But the problem of evil is kind of unique. I don't think it's a defeater, but it is troubling. And even people who think that God has a sufficient reason for having allowed something like the Holocaust, it's kind of emotionally jarring. And given the fact that these were Jews, these were God's people in the Old Testament, I mean, what happened? You would think of if there were be anybody God would protect, wouldn't he protect his chosen people in that kind of context? So I think we've got some things to talk about, and we won't solve it, but I'm hoping this will be further discussion of maybe the biggest challenge to belief in God and belief in the authenticity of the Bible and Christianity.
Okay.
Well, let me begin by telling you how the article I wrote came to be. Joe, I like to put quotations on social media, and there's a theologian that I like very much, Tom Oden. I especially like him because He's not in my theological tradition. He was a Methodist, but Tom is one of the very few people that ever went from being very theologically liberal to becoming solidly conservative and orthodox. Tom Oden's story is a real extraordinary thing. He, in his college years, I think he was an aide to Rudolf Bultmann. So it tells you how kind of extreme he was in his theology. But the Lord brought him back, and he, you know, defended classical Christianity. And I've always enjoyed reading him. I met him one time, and we talked a lot about things like predestination and grace, and he was a real gentleman. I enjoyed it. But here's a quotation I left of from his book on systematic theology on my social media. He says this: God would not be as holy as God is without being incomparably loving. God would not be as loving as God is without being incomparably holy. God's holiness without God's love would be unbearable. God's love without God's holiness would be unjust. God's wisdom found a way to bring them congruently together. It involved a cross. So I just like the way that Oden summarizes things. He talks about the attributes of God, that God is completely and unsurpassingly holy, but he's also good and loving at the same time. And the love, in some respects, kind of balances the holiness. And one without the other. I mean, would you want to stand in the presence of a completely holy God without any mercy, without any goodness that may extend to you love or grace? On the other hand, you could talk about God's love, but if God is not holy and just, it really doesn't mean much. So it's bringing those attributes together. And what's interesting, of course, is that a friend of our ministry, Dr. David Block, Dr. David Block heads the RTB Africa. He is an esteemed astronomer. Him and Hugh Ross have been friends for many years. David, of course, is Jewish. He is a Messianic Jew, and maybe a little background for people who don't know much about it. David has embraced Yeshua, Jesus, as his Messiah. And I like to say that Messianic Jews are culturally Jewish, but doctrinally or theologically, they're Christian in their orientation. Think of Jews for Jesus. They believe in the Trinity. They believe in the Incarnation, the Atonement, the Second Coming. So David is a very provocative speaker. He was a visiting scholar here last year. And he left a little note after reading my quote from Tom Oden. You never know who's going to come on and what they're going to say. But here is David said. He said, "Ken, how might you read this paragraph by Oden to a Jewish Holocaust survivor? Jewish survivors often only saw absolute terror as smoke arose from the crematoria and the gas chambers." And when he left that, I identified that, Joe, as the most difficult question I think I've ever been asked about my faith. And again, I've been thinking about this a long time. I remember as a young man in college, I had some Time Life books. Joe, you may be familiar with some of those. And there was one devoted to the Holocaust. And I mean, reading through that book, it's horrific. The photographs are just so horrific. They are deeply disturbing. And to read about some of these large concentration camps like Auschwitz, which was an extermination camp. The commandant of Auschwitz, a man named Hirsch, he testified at the Nuremberg trials that maybe 2 million Jewish people were put to death there in that particular camp. Most of them were in the east where they could be hidden. It's interesting that I think the Nazis recognized that what they were doing was evil because they tried to cover it up. course, there are people today who are very prejudicial in their thinking, and they think they're right and justified, and they don't try to cover it up. But that's another topic and another issue. And so it brought back a lot of my thinking about these things. I might also say, Joe, that my father, Jesse Alexander Samples, he was a combat soldier in World War II. He spent 190 days in combat. He went to Europe, went to France in September of 1944, so a couple months after D-Day. But my dad was in two infantry divisions. The first infantry division, United States Infantry Division he was part of, was the 95th. Later, he transferred to the 44th. I remember Michael, my son, and I visited the United States Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and lo and behold, they were celebrating the American infantry divisions that liberated Jewish camps. And so Michael and I got to see, you know, a poster about the 95th Infantry Division that liberated a Jewish concentration camp in Germany, in Wehrl. The 44th Infantry Division was also distinguished in that they captured the German rocket scientists who later came to America and in many ways laid the path for America landing on the moon. So World War II has kind of been in my DNA for a long time, and I've thought a lot about these kinds of things. And I remember one of the last conversations I had with my father. I remember we had kind of a direct conversation, and he asked me, he said, do you think God will punish me for killing so many of those German soldiers during World War II? And I looked in my dad's eyes. He always had these deep brown eyes. And I could tell he was right back there. This was like 1985. And I could tell from looking at him, he was, you know, he was thinking about what happened 40 years before. My mother used to tell me that when he first came home from World War II in July of 1945, on the Queen Elizabeth into New York Bay, my mom would tell me that he had some real challenges. He'd wake up in the middle of the night and scream. And by the time my mom could get the light on, he'd be on the floor like he was trying to dig a foxhole. And so I don't think there's any doubt that my dad, like so many soldiers, had something like post-traumatic stress. Of course, in those days, they didn't call it. They called it shell shock or combat fatigue and things like that. But I remember my dad asking my that question. And I said, Dad, I said, you had to do what you did. I said, you know, you helped stop the Holocaust. If there weren't men like you, think of how many people would have been murdered. And, you know, this is a big issue. As an apologist, I do think that the 20th century is a unique time. You know, people die every day. Large numbers of people die every day. Death is part of the human condition. People die in accidents. People die because they get older. They have diseases. But when you think about the numbers of deaths in the 20th century, particularly to young people, you know, here's a statistic. In Russia, in those days, it was called the Soviet Union. If you were born in the year 1923, it meant that you turned 18 in 1941, and that was not good, because in 1941, the German army, the Wehrmacht, invaded the Soviet Union. Well, Joe, of the Russian men born in 1923, 80% of that generation died in World War II. Wow. Think about that, an entire group. I mean, you know, you and I both have sons. We recognize that what would it be like to lose your son? Well, these are difficult issues. And thus, some people have said the 20th century was like maybe no century before. And of course, there are people who raise questions about the goodness of Christianity, and they bring up things like, you know, the Inquisition or the Crusades and issues like that. But think of the 20th century and the totalitarian regimes. I mean, remember, Soviet communism, part of their public statement was that they were atheistic. They were dialectical materialists, going back to the philosophy of Marx and Engels. You know, so their atheism was part of their state presentation. And I definitely think Christians need to come up with thoughtful answers about violence in the name of God. But I equally think that people who don't believe in God need to carefully consider what kind of totalitarian regimes and what they've done in the light of no God. And of course, in my book, Christianity Cross-Examined, I try to explore some of these things. But David asked me this question. And of course, what made it difficult is I know that he is a Messianic Jew. And I know David has spent a good bit of his life trying to share his faith with other Jewish people. And, you know, he has said it here. When you talk about God being loving and holy in light of the Holocaust, people are going to come back and say, well, where was that holy, loving God? You know, and I mean, think about it. My dad told me that when he made it into Berlin and they went to visit some of these camps, my dad said you could smell it. Maybe a mile away, the rotting flesh, the bodies, you know, piled on each other, people walking around as if they were, you know, completely starving. You could see their backbones from the front. This was horrific. General Eisenhower, who, of course, later became President Eisenhower, General Eisenhower decided to go and personally visit the camps and have them filmed because he said he wanted a historical record, lest anybody ever think that it was pure propaganda. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a wise general because, Joe, there are numerous people today who say the Holocaust is a myth. And I kind of grew up thinking about those kinds of things and wrestling with them. Let me pause for a minute, maybe get your thoughts before I kind of dig into some of the responses that I gave to David.
My only thought is I've been listening with my ears perked up, but it's just sobering to hear how you've described it. And certainly I appreciate people like your father and many others who did what they did, but I'm hanging in there with you. No thoughts other than please proceed.
Very good. Well, what I said to David, first of all, is I said, David, I know that you're a Messianic Jew, and I know that, you know, your people died there. I said, I also know that, you know, you have made an effort as a professional astronomer. And again, David Block he's really kind of a world-class astronomer. He's done a lot of work in the field and has lectured in various places in the world. But he has gone out of his way to try to convince people who are Jewish that maybe they should give Jesus a chance. Maybe, and of course, in a Jewish context, they refer to Jesus with his Hebrew name, Yeshua. And I'm very sensitive to that, Joe, because I realize that in many Jewish contexts, to mention the name Jesus or to talk about Christianity, it is, you just don't go there. That is seen as offensive, you know, and sometimes even people who appreciate the role that Christianity has played, they still are uncomfortable with groups like Jews for Jesus, where you're going to kind of sneak in and, you know, convert us away from our own, you know, deep roots as Jewish people. So I appreciate David very much. That's not an easy ministry to have, where you essentially have to get somebody to consider Jesus as the Messiah when, for the most part, that's just not a road that's traveled. So there's kind of a stopping point. Here's what I said to David. I said, you know, if I were talking to Jewish people that had survived the Holocaust, who had lost loved ones, and again, it's estimated about 6 million Jews died. Millions of Polish people died. Millions of Russian people died. The Germans were not friendly at all to Jehovah's Witnesses, to homosexuals. They saw that as offensive. There were many Eastern Orthodox Christians who died. The numbers could exceed well into 20 million people. And so it's an extraordinary number. What I said to David, Joe, is I think the first thing that I would do is hug that person. I would hug the person who has lost family members in the Holocaust. I think in some respects, Joe, the answer to the problem of evil when people have been victims, whether it's victims of war or victims of violence or persecution, whatever it may be, is just kind of conveying to them our deep empathy, that we care about them, that we love them. And, you know, I said to David, I said, one of the things I'm most proud about in my dad's service is that, God forbid, that the Holocaust would have gone further, that the Americans, along with their allies, the British, the French, the Soviets, and all kinds of other nations that were part of the military alliance, you know, that they halted that, they stopped it. And I think the only way to have stopped the Holocaust in Nazi Germany was, Joe, to just utterly destroy it. And, you know, I'm glad that that happened. And I think in light of the fact that we live in a world today where anti-Semitism has emerged in various parts of the world. There are areas, for example, in the Islamic world where there is great pushback against Jewish people, but not just on the Arab street, it's also in America. All you need to do is watch a little television and you'll see protests on some of the Ivy League schools where people make statements about the Palestinian-Israeli war. Well, not only would I want to hug that person, Joe, I would want to convey the recognition that they've experienced terrible suffering. I have been around people who have been victims of crime, and they experience, you know, trauma. And that's where I think showing people love and concern and care is very important. It's not just coming up with an intellectual answer, but it is conveying to people that I feel your deep pain, and I take it seriously. You know, it's not just an academic type of issue. What I went on to say to David was that, you know, when you look at Tom Oden's statement about God's holiness and God's love, that this is grounded and rooted in the Old Testament. It's in the Hebrew scriptures. I mean, here is Isaiah 6:3, and they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." This repetition of the word holy, extending God's perfect holiness, I wonder if the repeating of it three times may have some reference, you know, to an inherent Trinitarian idea. Here's another passage from Jeremiah 31:3. "The Lord appeared to us in the past, saying, 'I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with an unfailing kindness.'" So this idea that God is unsurpassingly loving and unsurpassingly holy, it's not merely a New Testament idea. These attributes are attributed to Yahweh Elohim, the Lord God of Israel. So this is certainly rooted in the Old Testament. I try to do some of this in Seven Truths That Changed the World, Joe, where I talk about sin, God's forgiveness, God's love, God's mercy, his justice. kind of spelling it out. And of course, a passage that I'll bet lots of our listeners are aware of is Genesis 18:25. Will not the judge of all the earth do what is right? And there I want to kind of outline, I think, a very important way of responding to the problem of evil. If there is evil in the world, Joe, then we live in a moral universe. If we don't live in a moral universe, then there is no such thing as evil. I mean, what's worse, the evil of the Holocaust, or to accept a worldview that says, well, there really isn't anything evil? I think it's that second option that troubles me even more. If there's no God, if there's no life after death, if there is no ultimate meaning and purpose, if there are no moral objectives, certain things being prescriptively wrong, others being prescriptively right, then the Holocaust is just a natural event. What's the difference of millions of people being murdered as opposed to animals or insects or whatever it may be? Christianity affirms the teaching of the Old Testament that God is going to return to the world that he made. Christ is going to return, his second coming. Part of that second coming will be the consummation of all things, where things will completely and utterly change. He will return not as a lowly carpenter from Galilee, from Nazareth, but he will come in all of his glory. And part of what will follow then will be the resurrection of all people. Those who've believed in God, those who've disbelieved in God will all be raised, believers and non-believers. And then there will be a judgment. And I think that this is a very important point to bring up in the context of evil done in the world, that God plans to take all the crooked straws and make them straight. He plans to address these evils that have done. And in the context of this, of course, is the apocalyptic book of Revelation that says there will be no more crying, there will be no more suffering, there'll be no more pain, no more evil. In some respects, God is going to bring forth a consummation of all of the evil things that have been done. And, you know, again, Jesus says things like, you know, you hurt a little one, it'd be better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck and be cast into the sea. So God is not going to allow this to stand. And there is in some way going to be a recompense for all of this. Now, that's not the only answer that I want to give, but I think it's important to realize that we live in a moral universe. There is real evil in the world. The gospel is correct. Human beings have rebelled against God. There were angels that rebelled against God. God is addressing this issue. And thus the world we live in is not the way it was intended to be, meaning that there has been the fall, and out of the fall comes human sin. And to me, I wonder, Joe, about anti-Semitism. It runs very deep. It seems to never go away. I mean, the fact that you would have protests on college campuses in the Western world, in Australia, they had students on a campus chanting, "Gas the Jews." I mean, imagine that. It's remarkable. I almost think that anti-Semitism can't be explained except maybe as a demonic element, that there is this anger and deep hatred toward the Bible and the people of God. So these are some of the things that, you know, I would want to share. And again, I want to come back to Yahweh, that, you know, he has, I think the Old Testament message and the New Testament message is that God has a sufficient reason for allowing what happens in the world, that he does not commit evil himself, but he allows some evil to take place. And there is a sufficient reason for that. Now, I again want to unpackage a few things. I mean, God comes to the earth in the person of his son, Jesus Christ. Jesus is a single person with both a divine nature and a human nature. So in his divine nature, he's equal to the Father and the Holy Spirit. As a human being, he is like you and I in all ways, except for our sinfulness. And yet what happens to him when he comes to his own people? He's rejected. He's ultimately crucified. And out of that utter injustice comes salvation. God has a way of working good out of evil. Think back to Joseph in the Old Testament. Think about people like Abraham and Moses. Think about the Apostle Paul, the suffering, the challenges they face, but God is working behind the scenes. God is working all things together for good for those who love him, those who are called according to his purpose. This idea that God brings good out of evil, I think, is a very important theodicy. And I see it in my own life. I love vacations. I love recreation. I enjoy opportunity to have fun with my friends and my family. But most of the things that have really made me grow as a moral person in life have had to do with difficulties and struggles. Now, I don't want to say too much about that because, you know, when you talk to Jewish people about, well, what was God's purpose? Was he going to teach the Jewish people moral lessons? You know, what was his purpose? I think that there is a lot of mystery involved. And, you know, if we go to what I think is the classic example, when God has a discussion, Yahweh has a discussion with Job, I think when you read it in Job 38, you recognize that God essentially says to Job, you don't have the intellectual, the moral, or the spiritual depth to understand what my ultimate purposes are. And it would be better for you to trust me in this, that God is infinite. He is eternal. He is moral in his own being, his goodness, his holiness. And for creatures to say, well, I demand of you, give me an accounting. God says, Job, it's above your pay grade. And I think that is also an important part of this theodicy, that God doesn't deal with things exactly the way that we do. God's relationship to the world and to evil is different than human beings. So those are some of the things I kind of develop in the article. I want to give you an opportunity, Joe, to maybe comment or ask questions.
Yeah, a comment that leads to a question is, you've been describing this response, and I sit here in utter fascination. A couple of ideas that came to mind. The idea of humanity's fallenness, and yet the fact that we're created in God's image. So you have a couple of doctrines there that come together to help explain how this has come about. When I think of the image of God, I think of people like those infantry men who helped liberate the camps and many other heroes during the Holocaust. And I also recall something I heard a few years ago, a talk by a theologian I admire, who said he was asked to come and visit somebody who was dying of cancer in the hospital to say some words. And he went, but he didn't know what to say. So when he left the hospital, he remarked to somebody that, I feel like a total failure, I had nothing to say. But then he heard later about the person he had visited, that person greatly appreciated his being there. And that was what they needed, was the human touch, the physical presence of that person, not that they had anything to say. So that just came to mind. I want to get your thoughts on that we're created in God's image, and yet we're fallen. So the fallenness explains a lot of things, but also the fact that we're created in God's image also explains some things.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, again, Blaise Pascal's description of human beings being this enigma, this riddle of greatness and wretchedness, human beings, I think, clearly are different in an exceptional way, not merely in degree, our capacity to create art, our capacity to create the natural sciences, to engage in philosophical questions. But then, you know, human beings have not only created atomic weapons, but they've also used them. Human beings, you know, after all, we're talking about modern Germany. We're talking about a nation that has produced some of the greatest art, some of the greatest education, music, philosophy the world has ever seen. And yet it's a modern German nation in which a totalitarian dictatorship takes over, and they make it public policy to put people to death. I mean, think of the greatness and the wretchedness, Genesis 3, the fall. A number of programs ago, we talked about a particular atheist who said that maybe what Christianity gets right above all else is that idea of original sin. Thinking of Keith Parsons, who is a outspoken atheist and philosopher, very capable, but he says, look, the fact that people are capable of diabolical acts is right on the money. And I don't think that evolutionary theory, I liked something that Hugh Ross once said, that he thought human beings were both better and worse than what evolution you should expect from human evolution. Better and worse, meaning that the image of God makes us better, but the image of God can also be used in our diabolical actions. We can use our exceptional nature to do evil. So I think that the Christian worldview has, a powerful explanation in that regard. And I think as well that it's important to recognize that the world's not the way it's supposed to be, that you think about the Christian worldview, there's creation, then there's fall, then there's redemption, then there's consummation. Is there real evil in the world? I don't think there's any doubt about it. But if we live in a moral, if we live in a world where there is evil, Joe, then there must be a standard of goodness or morality that has overtaken that in this fallenness. So these are some of the things that I think that Christians can respond to. I think we need to be people who are creating hospitals, who are creating orphanages. We need to be people that are supporting people who are hurting. No, none of these actions save us. You're not saved by doing good works. But the Apostle Paul, I think, is crystal clear in the New Testament that we are saved by grace through faith in Christ, not by works. But saving faith is always motivating us. And I think motivating us to do good is to care for people, maybe especially who are hurting, people that have, suffered these kinds of things. And, I don't have all the answers of why God allows what God does, but I do know about his goodness. I know about his justice and his holiness. I know what he plans to do in the next world. I also know what came out of when God came to be with us in his life, his death, his suffering, but ultimately his resurrection. And I think we have an answer. Again, it's not as complete as I wish it were, but I think it's better than our worldview competitors. And in the end, I said to David, these are things that I would share. David wrote back a brief response, but it was a meaningful one to me. He said, immense appreciation indeed, Ken. for your touching and loving reply. And, you know, I don't think there's a defeater for God. At least I haven't come across it. But the problem of evil, pain, and suffering, we should never be glib. We should never fail to recognize that, you know, God has not revealed everything to us. And yet I still think we have an incredibly important way of confronting evil, pain, and suffering.
Yeah. One final comment from me. You mentioned earlier that anti-Semitism on campuses seems to be on the rise. That's very disturbing, obviously, as you described. And to help appreciate that, I've seen some of these videos, I'm sure you have as well, where somebody will go around interviewing people on campus and ask them basic questions about the Holocaust, namely, do you know what the Holocaust was? And can you name a camp or other things about it? And a lot of times the students were at a loss, if that is accurate, and I have no reason to doubt it, but it seems that there's a lack of education on these kinds of things. And that does not bode well if we're not properly informed about very recent history, wouldn't you say, Ken?
Absolutely. Some of the stats I've heard are startling to me. I remember a couple of years ago, Joe, we did a program on the Holocaust, and the data was that maybe almost 25% of millennials didn't know what the word meant or could not associate the word Holocaust with genocide and the extermination of the Jewish people. I mean, a quarter of these people, I mean, what are we teaching our kids in school? You know, what comes out of this kind of thing? And you're right. I mean, this is not ancient history. You know, World War II is less than 100 years in the past. And I am troubled that people don't recognize this. I'm also troubled, Joe, that there's an increasing sense that the Holocaust may have been a myth, the conspiracy theories, things of this nature. You know, whether you agree, whatever you think about what's happening in the Middle East with regard to the war between Israel and Hamas and the context of the Palestinians, I think there are many Jewish people who say, look, we can't count on other people to protect us. And when you have the history of almost an entire third of your population was destroyed in a war, you know, these are issues that come forward. And so I think the Holocaust is a game changer, but I think in many respects it's only the Christian faith, only a biblical perspective that can really make sense of it. And Joe, some of the books and material that I want to encourage people, as you know, because you edited it, I have a recent article entitled "How Can God Be Holy and Loving in Light of Evil?" I'd encourage people to take a look at Tom Oden's book, Classic Christianity, A Systematic Theology. I would also encourage people to maybe take a look at my book, Seven Truths That Changed the World. I have a section on sin and the fallenness of man. I also have a section on redemption, and then two chapters on the problem of evil. So these are some of the resources that I think can be helpful. And RTB has other articles available on the problem of evil, the perennial problem of evil.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you for your thoughts. I really appreciate hearing them. I'm sure our listeners will as well. Pass along the link and let others know about the podcast if they're not aware of it already. You can get Clear Thinking sent to your device by subscribing to the Reasons to Believe podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and most podcast services. And let us know your comments and questions. You can reach out to Ken on X at RTB_KSamples. That's going to wrap it up for Ken Samples. This is Joey Geary with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening and join us for the next edition of Clear Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.